and welcome to the GlobePX podcast. As we have come to accept that the virtual working world is here to stay for quite a while, we're excited to continue this podcast and provide connection, content, and support to Oregon's hub of global changemakers. My name is Andrea Johnson, and I'm the chair of the GlobePX Advisory Board and the executive director at Green Empowerment. In today's Speaking Change podcast, we are joined by Congressman Earl Blumenhauer. He is currently a member of the Ways and Means Committee, chairman of the Subcommittee on Trade, and a member of the Subcommittee on Health. Earl is a lifelong Portland resident, first elected to the House of Representatives in 1996. Earl was one of the youngest legislators in Oregon's history and was also a Multnomah County Commissioner and a member of the Portland City Council before taking his efforts national. Earl's full bio can be found on the GlobePX.org website. Earl, thank you so much for joining me today.
No, my pleasure.
So obviously there's a lot we could be talking about given your multiple roles in the U.S. Congress. But one of the reasons we're so excited to have you is because of your work with the Water Sanitation Hygiene or WASH Caucus. So before we dive in, can you give our listeners a quick overview of what the WASH Caucus is and what its goals are?
Sure. I've been working in this space throughout my congressional career. I have been struck that access to clean drinking water and sanitation was critical. It ties into so many of our objectives in terms of environment, global health, even national security. But it really hasn't had the focus that I think it merits. So what we have done, there's, 210 caucuses in Congress. As Congress becomes less functional on the committee level, people band together informally to try and spotlight critical areas. This caucus will provide focused oversight and advocacy around water and sanitation issues, which, as I mentioned, are just absolutely essential to our global health, economic productivity, the ecosystem's function, and national security. And this is a way for us to demonstrate that bipartisan support, bringing people together from both parties, not just members of Congress, but even more important are the certified smart young people who really run the place, to be able to be current on these issues, to be able to share updated information, to bring in speakers who can help keep folks aware of recent developments and provide a different type of focus that's really not possible through the committee system.
So you've mentioned that kind of, you know, not possible. And obviously we're in a pretty tumultuous time here politically in the United States. And so why are you focusing on international work like this? You mentioned bipartisan, which seems like a foreign concept almost.
Well, sadly it is. But being able to deal with the fact that there are almost a billion people, I think 785 million is the latest estimate, but it's a staggering figure of people who do not have access to clean drinking water. And those that in some cases have it pay an exorbitant price. There are 2 billion people who do not have access to proper sanitation. There are more cell phones than toilets in India. And this is absolutely unfathomable for so many of us, but it has very significant implications. And we're looking over the course of the next 10 years in this era of climate disruption, drought, flood, that we're going to have almost 3 billion people in 48 countries who will face water shortages. I mean, this is something that is absolutely imperative that we address, and it isn't a Republican or a Democratic issue. We've had great success in having Republican partners move forward. Now, candidly, where we've run into trouble with them is that they didn't want to spend money on this problem, which is a little frustrating. Although I think with the Biden administration and Democrats in control of the House and Senate, we may be able to get past that. But it is one of the few areas where people can come together across party lines. In fact, some of the most And I'm trying to be polite in terms of talking about folks that are really out there in terms of their ideology, in terms of their partisanship, do have a soft spot for dealing with the problem that there are 5 million children that will die as a result of lack of water and sanitation. So this is a way to bridge those gaps. And I think it's not only help us solve this problem, but it may help us function better as a Congress.
Man, that is really oddly encouraging to hear. I think, you know, Green Empowerment, we work in WASH, and I will just say I'm pretty impressed at how well-versed you are in both the importance of it and also just understanding the scale of the impact. So what brought you to the kind of WASH sector in terms of thinking and understanding it? Like, what brought you to this?
Well, I've been involved with water and sanitation since I was involved in local government and had a chance to understand how important it was, how expensive it was, and how people take it for granted until it's not there. But we have kind of a legacy of international water and sanitation. I came to Congress just as Paul Simon, an Oregonian, a senator with Oregon roots from Illinois, was leaving. And he was passionate about this topic. He presented me with a picture and his book, Tapped Out. And it's something that I took to heart, not just because of my experience with the issue, but because I came to Congress at a time of deep partisan divisions. Newt Gingrich and the contract on America and things that really made it hard to function, kind of weaponized things. But it was clear this was an area that had unusual promise to be able to get something done that didn't have to be intensely partisan. And nothing in my experience since has indicated that's not the case. We've had some amazing partners. There was a Texan named Ted Poe, a very conservative judge from Texas, who had a passion for this. We worked with Ted, and in the course of a couple of years, he could give my speech better than I could. And so it just illustrates the power of this issue. At the same time, every day that goes by, we find more indications that it is critical. And you think now what's going on with the COVID-19 crisis going around the globe, and there are 3 billion people who can't wash their hands at home. So it always has a dimension that captures our attention and refocuses the need on moving it forward.
So as a WASH caucus, what are some of the ideas that you guys have to start addressing those things? I think a lot of our listeners are probably familiar with WASH, the scope, the intersection of climate. A lot of us are talking about this in our own programs. But from where you sit, what impact do you think you can have, or what priorities are you looking into?
Well, first and foremost, it was really critical for us to drive these points home and to give people digestible information. It's not just what I said about, you know, 3 billion people don't have access to wash their hands. We've got a billion children affected by neglected tropical diseases that link to sanitation and water. Half of all malnutrition is preventable because it's caused by contaminated water giving these little kids diarrhea. Putting a face on 300,000 babe children under 5 who'll die every year. Being able to make those points and then tie that back to our agenda in terms of foreign aid and assistance. I've had 2 major pieces of legislation, the Paul Simon Water for the World and the Water for the Poor Act, where we helped focus what the federal government does in terms of its programming. It is important for us in terms of our international development to help establish water and sanitation systems that are simple and effective. And in fact, you have, as you well know, so many people here in the Portland metropolitan area who are engaged in these missions. There's, you know, an NGO with one or two people to larger scale operations like Mercy Corps that have taken this mission. I love what's happened at Riverdale School for over the years. I've got one of my proudest possessions is a shirt that they gave me a few years ago that listed on the back all the villages in Africa that they were involved with helping people with water projects. So this is an opportunity to deal with something that's at a human scale. It doesn't need to be some massive engineering project. It doesn't need to be complex and grotesquely expensive. These are things that can be done on a person-to-person basis, one village at a time.
I kind of feel like I might need you to be Green Empowerment spokesperson because you're doing a better job than perhaps I am at selling the importance of this.
No. But I am really struck by the resources we have here. We had an update session a couple weeks ago that, again, brought some new people that I wasn't familiar with some old friends. There's a lot of horsepower here. And it is a person-to-person effort where people can see the results. And no matter what the level of expertise, the funding, there are things that can be done. And we want to get that across in Congress. We want to have that same sort of spirit. We want to empower the NGOs and to help individual members of Congress to embrace this, to take part of the agenda in terms of what we do with the USAID budget, what we do with international education, what we do with our partnership with international organizations, World Health and United Nations, and as well as the NGOs. So there's any range of opportunities. We want people to zero in on something that they care about and then pair it up with a group and organization, either in their district or state, or just one that gets on their radar screen that touches their heart.
Well, wonderful. You're definitely speaking the language of GlobePX and our mission, which is uniting, you know, Oregon's global change makers, which you are a great representative of. So thank you. So one of the questions I get, and I know a lot of my colleagues and peers get, is, you know, why focus on international issues when there are so many issues here at home? And I would love to hear your response to that, knowing that you have a lot of work to do on behalf of your constituents here at home.
I don't think they're mutually exclusive at all. I think the more that we focus on how we fit into this equation globally, it helps us focus more attention locally. And the notion that we can raise the awareness, if people understand how critical safe drinking water and sanitation is globally, you know, we've got problems in this country. We have conditions where, particularly in some southern states, there recently there's been tremendous attention given to champions who've been trying to deal with safe drinking water and sanitation in low-income communities. And it's not just in the South. Flint, Michigan is kind of a case study of where a northern industrial state had huge problems in terms of lead in the drinking water. We have a situation today with the COVID crisis where there are people who just are holding on by their fingertips, you know, trying to not get evicted. We've had a water and sanitation shut off because people haven't been able to pay their bills. Well, that is unconscionable. We shouldn't put people in a situation where they have to choose between paying the rent and being able to flush the toilet or being able to clean their children's hands. I think the more that we can have people understand how we are all in this together, that water and sanitation is a fundamental right. It's not cheap, but it is much less expensive than what we deal with the lack of it in terms of disease, in terms of the problems that people have. I think this is a key to have that sort of an empathy, to be able to broaden our vision and make sure that people understand that we're all in this together. And the same solutions that we're going to have in some rural communities in Oregon to be able to protect access to safe drinking water and sanitation is key to dealing with problems in sub-Saharan Africa or Southeast Asia.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And that response resonates with me quite a bit. One of the things that it came to mind as well when you're all in this together is the intersection of climate change as well. And, you know, you mentioned that, but that seems to contradict a little bit the idea of bipartisanship, knowing that maybe the other side of the aisle is not as open to accepting the impacts of climate change or addressing it. So how do you talk about climate impacts on WASH in that space?
I'm really glad you raised that, Andrea, because I see the language of safe drinking water and sanitation as something that can help bridge a divide that otherwise might be very ideological and partisan. Part of what's interesting about dealing with the challenges in water and sanitation is it kind of makes irrelevant some of the debate. The water is either there or it's not. It's either safe to drink or it's not. And people can see what's happening in terms of the encroachment of the desert in northern Africa, what happens with these extreme weather events that put people at risk. And candidly, it's not just in India or Pakistan. It's what we see extreme weather events in North Carolina with the hog lagoons. This, to me, is a potential linkage that makes the problem real. And they don't have to necessarily agree that it's a result of carbon pollution and that we need to move forward to have a low carbon future. But we need to have a future that deals with the consequences of extreme weather events, the consequences of these disasters that we're seeing with increasing frequency, and the fact that we need to be able to deal with the water and sanitation infrastructure that are increasingly at risk because of what is happening due to climate change. I think that this is an area that can help bridge the gaps. And if we focus on what is actually happening and how it's affecting people, I think that there is an area of having greater linkage and progress. 700 million children are in schools that don't have a latrine. An even greater number are in schools that lack hand washing facilities as they go back to school in the midst of a pandemic. The amazing number of hospitals that do not have clean water to be able to deal with proper sanitation dealing with infections. This is something that's really hard to dispute. And I think it paves the way forward for solutions that we're going to need regardless of the cause. But I do think that this is an area, as you get people working together on solving problems and they see the progress and they understand that this is getting worse, I see a little daylight.
I hope that our audience shares some of that optimism, because I do see this. I see it from your perspective, and it really feels hopeful, and I really love to hear that. So before we sign off, we are recording this podcast on the Monday following President Biden signing the COVID relief bill, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you how you're feeling right now about the situation and your ability to make progress on the issues that you care about, whether it's this or others.
Well, one of the reasons we've spent so much time dealing with water and sanitation, even when there wasn't a willingness on the part of my Republican colleagues to spend a lot of money, nonetheless, it was an avenue where we could see some progress. It's been frustrating to see people kind of be reluctant to make the investments that are necessary. It's been grudging. And then this new Congress, I mean, it started kind of horrifically when we had a mob trying to overturn the results of a free election and trying to kill members of Congress, hang Mike Pence. I mean, this was really jarring, particularly when there were 137 of my Republican friends that were, you know, egging them on. But I think from that moment, there's been a galvanizing effort. The Biden administration, I think, has done everything right. They've not been involved with trying to score political points. In fact, they have decidedly been sort of low-key, non-political. President Biden went to Texas in the aftermath of that disaster, even though Texan terrible policies and politics made it worse. He was there to help. We were able to have the Senate under Democratic control, which meant all the good legislation that the House sent to the Senate last Congress just to die on Mitch McConnell's desk and never even have a hearing. Well, now it's going to be heard. And the Recovery Act, the COVID relief package of $1.9 trillion, dealing with everything from health resources, helping people with their health insurance, what's happening with more resources for vaccination and dealing with COVID-related problems, to cutting child poverty essentially in half as a result of the expansion of the child tax credit. I've been working for almost a year trying to rescue our restaurants, independent restaurants in Portland and around the country. And they're $28.6 billion to give a lifeline to those areas that make so much of a difference to our community and elsewhere. As I look across the board, all of these and so much more represent a breakthrough to be able to actually give people help. We do a lot of work with minority farmers, and that legislation was the largest payment, some $5 billion for Black farmers who have been cheated by the federal government, discriminated against in terms of resources. And it's there to help strengthen and actually make up for past very harmful discrimination that had serious economic consequences. Case after case, things that make a difference for everyday people's lives, and I think give a signal of hope. I anticipate that we'll be able to do more. We've passed legislation dealing with the integrity of the elections process, with gun safety, and their future in an evenly divided Senate is uncertain. But at least they will be considered. And these are things that people in our community want. They're frustrated that they've never really been given a full hearing, although we were able to get them passed in the House, which is not insignificant. I have legislation that will enshrine in federal law the work that we did with the Oregon elections dealing with mail-in balloting, which are safe, secure, inexpensive, and better in a time of COVID. And I was able to get in that HR1 work that we did in Oregon. I was actually the first member of Congress to ever be elected by an all mail-in ballot. We in Oregon know that that works. It's safe. It's effective. So these are all things that just make me smile. I hope people are encouraged that they're seeing the light of day, they're being teed up, and we're preparing for what will undoubtedly be important struggles down the line. But for the first time, we've got a chance to make sure some of them get across the finish line, and it starts with that COVID relief package.
Well, that's really great to hear. It's such an awesome opportunity, I think, for me and for our listeners to hear directly from you. So we really appreciate your time. Any other message you'd like to leave with our audience today?
Well, we just deeply appreciate how much people in our community care. reaching out for one another, dealing with the COVID crisis, dealing with the cries for racial and economic justice, and fight for the future of the planet in terms of a low carbon future and the international health challenges. These are all things that I hope they feel good about because people here in our community are making a difference.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Earl, for being with us, and thank you for being a global change maker. GlobalPX is dedicated to keeping you connected and engaged. For resources from this podcast and more, check out our website. If you aren't already a member, please consider joining our community and feel free to email communications@globalpx.org with any questions. Stay tuned for new episodes of our Speaking Change podcast, and please share with your fellow changemakers. This podcast is brought to you by GlobalPX with special support from Ted Shera. Thank you so much for volunteering your expertise with us.